Newstalk 99.7 WNTK AM 1490 FM 98.9 WEUVR. Welcome to the third edition of our program with George Newart from GMN Construction, as well as Trusted Rentals Automotive in Newport. Good morning, George.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good.
If anyone is unfamiliar with the program that we've aired the past couple of weeks, we're kind of just doing an overarching kind of home improvement, home-based program to kind of talk about, you know, some issues that are relevant at any time, especially the past couple of weeks. We've been talking about insulation and winterizing and, you know, trying to get your home in shape for some energy savings and cost savings and that type of thing. And I think we're going to kind of continue on that vein this week and kind of wrap up the insulation aspect of things. What do we got this week?
Okay. So, Matt, so what I wanted to do today was, in this show, I wanted to try to bring full circle the whole insulating air sealing theory behind your home, your existing home. And because homes were built during various years and centuries, decades, they were built with whatever technology, whatever theories were prominent at the time. And so we go through our remodeling process of older homes and we kind of see how people insulated. Like I said previously, I've seen houses insulated with tobacco. I've seen them insulated with corn cobs and acorns. I've seen them insulated with shredded newspapers. And basically, you know, depending on the region where you live, if it's a poor area, people are going to do whatever is necessary to try to satisfy that separation between the outside temperature and the inside temperature.
Yeah.
Because regardless of what century or decade we're in, heating your home, whether it's with wood or oil or propane, cost a bunch of money. You know, the thing with radio is also is that, you know, sometimes I don't get it right. I feel like each successive show we can do is a means of clarifying the previous show. And so what I'm going to do right now is, I know that windows and doors was the hot button topic that we talked about last week extensively, but I think I left a few things out. And that is, I just wanted to be clear with the public as far as like what they're looking for when it comes to the numbers. And in order to be specific, it really requires a homeowner to go visit their window or door professionals. Like I use Josh Starcher at LaValle's, or I use Owen at Bellitates down in Andover. And so you have these professionals that can be of significant value to you and can individually look at your situation and kind of point you in the right direction as to what's best for your circumstances.
Okay.
So what I wanted to do is I wanted to provide some numbers and some other dialogue onto why we would choose, let's just say our house needed to have the windows replaced. I'm going to focus on windows primarily because the largest amount of glazing or glass surface area in our house is the windows, not the doors. And the thickness of the windows, the thinness of the windows is a very significant contributor to heat loss. And so I wanted to go through the numbers specifically. I think last week was like I had some numbers of one thing and left out numbers of something else. And so I just wanted to make sure that the public was clear on what numbers they should be looking at. If you go to LaValle's or Bellitates, you go Lumber Barn, wherever, and you're like, this is what I want for a window. How would a person advise you? You want certain numbers. But based on your individual circumstance or situation, your numbers might be different. I'm just trying to get you in with the theory of what numbers you should be looking at.
Okay.
Last week, we started with the U value. The U value is a tricky one. The U value number of your window should be about 0.30 or less. We've put in Anderson windows, Marvin windows. Every year, they seem to be getting lower and lower with the U value. So I just want to like state the case for if you have a window with a U value of 0.30 and less, that's probably a pretty good window number.
Okay.
As far as R value goes, you want a unit around R5, depending on the thickness of the glass, depending on the manufacturer, depending on the caliber of the units. We've seen R values down around 2, but really you want something around 5. That's just, I mean, just think of the thinness of the glass, the glazing, in relationship to the thickness of the wall. And you want to just get a unit that's better built, because the better built units have higher R value. We've already discussed the nuances of what U-value is and what R-value is and what solar heat and decay coefficient is and what the DP. We've already gone through that. I'm just trying to be specific about what numbers you should be looking for.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so the next one is the solar heat gain coefficient. The solar heat gain coefficient is kind of a funny one. So we know of a lot of people up here that have northern houses. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have southern houses. The same people have northern houses as they have southern houses. We call them snowbirds. They leave in the wintertime.
Yep.
So the solar heat gain coefficient is the quality of the glass to basically transmit the sun's heat. In other words, how much warming effect do we want as a result of the sun coming through our windows? Mm-hmm. If you're in a cooling climate, if you have AC in your house, you want a solar heat gain coefficient that's lower. In an air-conditioned climate, you want a lower number so that less heat from the sun is coming through your windows. The United States is broken up into 8 heating and cooling climates. Starts with number one down in Florida, Texas. It moves up regionally. The country is divided into like a Swiss cheese block. Mm-hmm. We are in heating cooling zone number 6, New Hampshire is. And so we have primarily heating, mm-hmm. and we have certain 2 or 3, maybe 4 weeks in the summer where everybody's clamoring to get their air conditioning out. We are in a heating climate. We are basically, if you look at the relationship percentage-wise, New Hampshire is a heating climate. So mm-hmm. what you would like as a solar heat gain coefficient, you would want a higher number between 0.30 and 0.60. You'd like a higher number so that you gain the benefit of that sun coming through your windows and basically receiving free heat.
Right.
So that's why regionally, if you have a northern house, you're going to have one number because you're in a heating climate. Mm-hmm. And if you are down south, you're going to have another number because you're in a cooling climate. So the solar heat gain coefficient is a number that you want to keep track of based on where you are regionally. Mm-hmm. Between 0.30 and between 0.60 is a good number that allows you to have a little more benefit by the warmth of the sun.
How does that work in terms of the actual mechanics of the window?
You're going to have to ask Josh. You're going to have to ask Owen as far as the performance of the low E coatings. They put coatings on the glass, and they also use different types of gases. So there is a very technical portion of this equation that is in the fine print. All I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to direct people to the fact that they can lessen their carbon footprint. They can spend less money on heating and cooling if they just pay attention to the numbers.
Yep.
Is it significant? Is it going to be the difference between thousands and thousands of dollars a year? No, probably not. But you add a little thing to it, like you add the taking off of the trim and foaming around the windows. You look at the performance of the window unit itself. You add, you know, insulating your roof. You add making sure that your doors shut tight. You add all these things together, and the savings can be significant.
Yeah. Well, and it depends on house by house. I mean, case in point, my house. I mean, there's a couple windows that I had redone the trim on, and when I was behind there, I mean, there's literally no insulation around the window whatsoever.
Right.
So, I mean, in those cases, I'm sure it's probably is significant.
Okay. So, last thing. So, we have the U-value, the R-value, the solar heat gains coefficient, and we have the DP rating. The DP rating is the design pressure rating. So we don't put a window in that has a design pressure rating less than 50. Okay. So 50 is the highest rating you can get by that National Fenestration Council, and we try to aim for the best units, which is a DP of 50.
Okay.
So we identified in the first show the importance of insulation. You know, the first show was about having icicles hanging off your roof, and if you got icicles touching your ground, or you have ice damming and you have water building up behind your ice dams and then it leaks into your house. Basically, I mean, people call roofers because their house is leaking. Mm-hmm. And a majority of the time, it's because of heat loss. I mean, you think of it. You have your roof system on your house. You have a portion of your roof with an overhang that's outside of your building envelope. And then you have a foot up, 16, 18 inches up from the outside wall is inside your house. So you have this piece that if the sun hits your house just right and you have lack of insulation, you're going to have like what we call the perfect storm. The snow provides the fuel. The sun melts the snow. You have concentrated energy heating loss because of lack of insulation within your building envelope. Mm-hmm. That moisture melts, goes down past your outside wall and freezes. Then it creates a dam where the successive snow coming down the roof has nowhere to go except backing up. So those ice dams primarily are caused by inadequate insulation, and then you have basically a pond builds up behind this ice dam, and no roofing material except rubber roofing is able to withstand the element of a pond backing up behind this ice dam, and water's just going to come in your house. And we've seen it time and time again. And we try to use ice and water shield, and we try to use these rubber membranes. And basically, if water wants to come in your house, water's going to come in your house.
Yeah.
So the other things that we can do, you know, I try to categorize this into ways in which we can save money, obviously, is one of the big things is foundations. Like if you have a full foundation under your house and you go downstairs in your basement, you're going to see this area. You might see it, you might not, depending on whether your ceiling's finished. But there's this area. It's called the box band. The box band is an area that sits on top of the foundation. Usually when we build a new house, we put a pressure-treated plate on top of the foundation as a separation barrier, and we build our floor system on top of that pressure-treated plate. Well, there is a band, a piece of wood, or in some cases we use these chipboard pieces called timber strand, like with the floor systems we use. You have this band that goes around your house that basically covers the end of your joists, your floor joist on the eaves, and on the ends, the gable ends, the floor joist or the timber strand, the box band goes right to the outside. Either way, whether you're on an eave or whether you're on a gable, the box band goes all the way to the outside of your pressure treated plate, and the floor joists sit on top of the pressure treated plate, and the box band piece is nailed or fastened into the floor joist so that when you put your subfloor, your 3/4 plywood down, you have a nice rectangular box that you can then frame your walls and build your house off of. The problem is that this box band piece is often overlooked. And for instance, you know, one of the things that we do to try to air seal this box band detail is that underneath the pressure treated plate, we use what's called sill seal. It's a foam gasket, 1/4-inch foam gasket. Sometimes it's enough to make up for the irregularities in the concrete. We have Victor Branch pour our foundation, so we have very, very little irregularity. If anybody knows Victor Branch, his foundations are basically perfect. But it's still a reason for wind to infiltrate your house. The foam gasket isn't an impenetrable barrier. It's basically slows the wind down, but it's not necessarily a stop. So then you have the box band pieces themselves. They come in 12, 16-inch feet lengths, and you basically put them in segments around the outside of your house, and there's joints. And so I just want to draw attention to the fact that this portion of your house is one of the most commonly overlooked, because when you're walking around the first floor of your house, it's basically under your feet. And when you're down in the basement, it's over your head. So we as humans basically only see things at eye level. And I don't know why our feet don't get much respect, but the key to this spot, sometimes it's 7 1/4 inches tall based on your floor system if you use 2x8s. Sometimes it's 9 1/4 inches tall if you use a 2x10 floor system. Sometimes it's 11 1/4 inches tall if you use a 2x12 floor system. And sometimes it can be 14 inches, 16 inches, or 18 inches, depending on what kind of floor system you use. This box band area is a very significant source of heat loss because it's typically neglected in building and construction. I can almost guarantee if anybody has a house more than 25 years old, if they go downstairs in their basement and they look at where their floor joists land on the outside of the concrete, there's probably going to be just fiberglass chunks thrown in there.
That's literally what I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
There's no, it's just the wood sitting on top of concrete.
Exactly.
Cinder blocks.
Right. I mean, that's, So this is a very common place. So what I advise people to do is go downstairs in their basement, look up at where the floor joists land on the outside wall. And when it's a cold day, like this morning was 2 degrees at my house, just put your head up there and just see, like, are the curtains moving down in the basement? Basically the same theory.
Mm-hmm.
If the curtains are moving on your first floor, we're trying to address wind infiltration. Air from the outside is mixing with your inside air and causing your furnace, your boiler, to run more. It's a simple thing. So that's a big one itself. So I want to just raise people levels of awareness that that box band is it's a very easy to miss area, but the thing that should happen with these box bands is you should hire, if it's possible, hire a foaming company to come in and basically foam that area with minimally expanding foam. They have to do it with a truck and a compressor, and they do it more commercial, like just because of the volume, normally the volume of foam that's needed.
Yeah.
So sealing that up is very important.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of mine doesn't even have fiberglass. It's just bare.
So bad.
Yeah.
So then you take that, for instance, you take your foundation walls too. So the second thing down in the basement is you take your foundation walls. Like concrete is basically a heat sink. Mm-hmm. What I mean by heat sink is that it absorbs energy. There's nothing you can do with an old home to have the slab absorb energy, but there is something that you can do with the walls to absorb energy, and that is you can frame 2x4 walls in front of your foundation, in front of your concrete, and then insulate them. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to slow down or prevent that those BTUs, those the heating energy, you're trying to prevent the foundation from absorbing air that you've paid to heat. And so by creating a buffer between your heated air and the foundation itself, you can slow down that absorption process, because foundations, concrete absorbs heat at a pretty quick rate. That's why when we use radiant heat tubing in our foundations, we put radiant heat tubing in our slabs, it provides one of the greatest sources of residual heat, because once it heats up, it doesn't cool down. You're not always warming a slab from cold to warm to receive its radiating capability. You're basically keeping that slab warm. And then when the heat shuts off, when the thermostat stops calling for heat, you're still going to receive a residual value as a result of that mass being warm. And it's no different from radiant heat. That's, I mean, we're working in a house right now that we're in the house for the winter, and the radiant heat is warm, and we're putting flooring down right now. And the guys are like, wow, the floor is so nice and warm, because the material, the substrate, the plywood, the joist and everything heats up, absorbs BTUs, but then that process radiates after the thermostat gets shut off. So that's really the benefits to that type of heating system is, first of all, you don't see the heating system. You don't see the baseboard heat, and you get residual benefit after the thermostat stops calling for heat.
So what is the biggest part of the basement that you feel like is the most potential heat losing portion of it?
Primarily the walls.
The walls.
So temperature of the earth is about 55 degrees. So when you think about the space downstairs in your basement that you're trying to condition, whenever you're trying to heat or cool a space, we call it conditioning. Mm. You are trying to bring that temperature up 15 degrees. So the difference is between 55 and 70, you're trying to condition 15 degrees. And so that 15 degrees plays a significant part. There's nobody that wants their house at 50. 70 is comfortable, but it's only separated by 15 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. So you could put blue board, you know, Dow makes a 2-inch blue board that you could fasten directly to the foundation. Anything that you can do to slow down or prevent that cement from absorbing heat that you have paid to produce is the point.
Okay.
Again, each situation is going to be a little bit different. But basically what we're trying to do is just trying to raise the level of awareness that it's little percentages here and there.
Yeah.
It's 10%, 15%, 20%, and then you put all those percentages together, and that savings can be very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of the big points of trying to have less of a footprint. If we think about energy, we can create as large a house as we want. Since COVID, the size of the houses have been growing again.
Right.
But there's so many old homes out there. And so there's so many homes that are inefficient. And so instead of each of these homes consuming the normal amount of oil or propane, we can each kind of contribute towards lessening the demand. And I think that when we lessen the demand, cost is going to go down. So these are all very significant pieces. There's one other, I think, that we could engage in, and that is, you know, it's kind of a little controversial, but if we think about our heating system, let's just say we have a forced hot water heating system and all of our copper pipes conduct heat. I mean, if we're forcing 150 degree water through heat pipes, and those heat pipes are traveling through our house, that metal is radiating heat. And so one of the things we could do is you go to LaValle's, you go to Lumber Barn, you go to Bellatates, and you can buy this foam heat wrap. It's about a half an inch thick, and it's split with a piece of adhesive tape. They come in 8-foot lengths, and you can wrap all of your heat pipes in an insulation. And so that can help conserve energy, because instead of that heat radiating into the air, which it normally would do, you're actually applying the radiant process to your heat pipes by the heat of the hot water heating up the insulation. And then when the heat shuts off, that insulation
holds on to it.
Yeah, gives back.
Yeah.
You know, holds on to it a little bit. And, you know, you receive the benefit from that. Mm. You know, is it really significant? It's not enormously significant, but every little percentage, 2, 3, 5% adds up to a whole.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like you said, like any one piece may not be, you know, overly significant in and of itself. But when you start combining all of these things,
right,
if you start doing all these little projects and improving things left and right, then it's going to have an impact.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So now I'm thinking about things, and mm-hmm. I'll take it one step farther. Basically, mm-hmm. we've discussed insulation, how our home gives us feedback from the standpoint of insulation.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the last thing is that if anybody has a heated garage, you should give your garage as much respect as you give your house. For instance, if you use high quality windows in your house and your garage is heated, don't cheap out on cheaper quality windows for your garage. Use the same quality caliber windows that you have in your house as you would for your garage. Why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. It's still a heated space. If you have any size garage door, whether it's 9x7, 8x8, whether it's 7x16, 8x16, whatever size garage door you have, you want to make sure that the garage doors have a good thermal insulating value. And what I mean by that is that your garage doors are typically 2 inches thick. The exterior doors of your house are typically 1¾ inches. Today's properties for garage doors is typically some sort of foam.
Mm-hmm.
You can have vinyl embossed, which means the vinyl, you have a wood grain vinyl that's applied over an aluminum door or a steel door. Aluminum usually is used to keep the weight down, so it's easier on the openers. So if you think about your garage door, you want to have your garage door to have very similar insulating ability minimally as your doors of your house, which should be about an R10. We use Garaga doors. They're a Canadian-made door. And we kind of use them exclusively because they have the highest R value that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody's going to come back here and say, well, George, there's this door that also has this. Garaga is the door that I've been using for a long time, 15 years. And you can buy a Garaga door with an insulating value of 18. And so, you know, if you think about the fact that you've got this big bulky unit in your house that goes up and down on these seals, the door itself is inherently drafty just because it's very difficult to seal a garage door 100%. You're going to get some drafts through it. So the way you can make up for its lack of efficiency is by just buying the door slabs themselves. Just have them be higher quality.
Mm.
They're going to cost more money. A Garaga door is probably 25% more than a Wayne Dalton. I don't think you can buy a Wayne Dalton door in an R18. I don't know whether you can right now. I don't think you can. The Garaga doors are significantly more expensive,
yeah.
And you're going to spend more money once, and you're going to have the benefit of that higher caliber, higher quality product for a long time.
You said the typical R value for inside the house is 21.
Correct. Yeah.
So you're pretty close.
It's pretty close, exactly.
Yeah, for an outside door, yeah.
Right, and then look at the thinness of the door, and you know you can achieve an R18 when your wall is 5.5 inches thick, and you have an R21, or now they have R23 insulation, but R21 is still code.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you have all these little pieces that can play a very significant part in lowering your carrying cost. To me, it's all about carrying cost. How much does this house cost you year to year? And it just requires each person to make a spreadsheet on their computer and say, hey, this year we spent this amount for fuel. We did these improvements, this amount, we spent this amount for fuel. And just kind of everybody track how they can get that carrying cost lower.
Mm.
And I know you're going to have some expenditure, you're going to have some money, you're going to have to lay out, but it would be interesting for everyone to look at this as taking personal responsibility and realizing that fossil fuels, they're going to be around for a while, but
they're finite, though.
They are finite, yeah. Correct. So everybody can do their part. So I just wanted to kind of draw attention to the closure of this. And maybe at some point we'll have, we talked about with Matt before the show, maybe some we can have a call-in show that's very specific to insulation and just try to answer people's questions that may be specific to them. So all I'm trying to do is just present a generalization of how this topic can be relevant to each person. And each person can kind of have an impact on how much money they spend in fuel and how much money goes to big oil.
Right.
You know, what we're trying to do also is in this show, we're trying to create an atmosphere where people are looking forward to the next show.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm kind of a type of person that can kind of look at what works and what doesn't work and just try to make pivots and try to change directions and make different decisions on what I see out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not complicated. I just kind of look out there and see what works and what doesn't work and just try to make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do in the next show is I'd like to describe to people, I'd like to give people an idea of how we build a house today that is very energy efficient. And believe it or not, I've gone back to a very conventional way of building. I went through years and years of foaming everything, and I went through years of, you know, taping vapor barriers to electrical boxes. And believe it or not, I've kind of, the pendulum has swung in the direction of making sure we are conscious of moisture in our house, how much moisture we're producing, what we do with that moisture. Just a simple thing, like for instance, why would we build a house so tight that we have to have an air exchanger? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
There's going to be plenty of brainiacs out there that are going to throw rocks at me and say, oh, it's because I'm not doing it right. But a house is an organic structure. And in my opinion, a house needs to breathe. So what I'd like to do is kind of talk about how we build an addition or a house today, a very high performing home, and kind of do it in a way that makes sense. It's respectful of the structure we're building. It's not working against the structure we're building. So that's what we're going to discuss next time.
Definitely interesting. If anyone does have any questions that we can answer for you in the meantime, feel free to email Matt, M-A-T-T, at WNTK.com, and we'll discuss anything that you have your own concerns about with your own home or just want to know in general. That's what the show is here for. So Matt at WNTK.com, and we will talk to you next week with another edition of the program with George Newer Construction. We got to get a name at some point, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
With News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9 WUVR.